for a long time, it was like everybody was just so afraid to be themselves and everything was so buttoned up and, you know, white shirt, blue suit, plain, boring brands. And there's still a lot of that, but I'm seeing this movement of advisors, especially younger advisors who are projecting their personality and their lifestyle. They're doing really cool things with their brands. And that is creating differentiation. And it's creating a lot of opportunities for them because they're attracting attention in ways that maybe the big wirehouses and the other firms that are afraid to loosen up a little bit haven't been able to do. And I think that's a pretty great trend.
This is Bridging the Gap with your host, Matt Reiner.
Robert, Sophia, Snappy Crack, and welcome to Bridging the Gap. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I'm really excited about this conversation. As I said, I mean, I've had some of, you know, I feel like we've had Snappy Cracking on the podcast for a while. I mean, we might as well get y'all as a sponsor. We don't have any sponsors. So, you know, but with Angel and now you, I'm a huge fan of what y'all are doing. We're going to talk about everything marketing. We'll probably get into AI a little bit, how AI is impacting marketing. We'll probably get into metrics and data. But we'll talk about successes and tactics. But because I think that y'all are having such an impact on the industry, really changing the conversation around marketing and wealth management, right? Marketing and wealth management tended to be separate issues, and now they're combined to be one, and y'all are doing such a great job with that. So we'll dive into all that. But before we do, I have to ask you, what did the 13-year-old Robert Sophia want to do when he grew up?
I think I wanted to be a cowboy.
A cowboy?
13.
That's the first one.
That's an interesting age for me. I think I was in my Western phase at 13. I had boots and cowboy hats. My grandma took me down to give me my first big, you know, black felt cowboy hat. I think that's what I wanted to be. I wasn't one of those kids that was like, I'm going to be an astronaut. You know, I didn't have vision for that back then. I was just living the dream, having fun, dressing like I knew how to rope a steer, even though I didn't.
I love that. All right. So then tell us the story, how you went from wanting to be a cowboy to then building a highly successful marketing agency targeted at the least marketing savvy industry of wealth management there was.
That's a big bridge to gap there.
We got plenty of time here.
Yeah. So, you know, my family's very creative. I grew up with parents who are artists, but my grandfather was an entrepreneur and he took me to work with him when I was a kid. And he was a salesman at heart. So I'd sit at the table with him and I'd watch him sell to people. He would tell me, son, now when they get quiet, just slide the pen across the table. And then he'd have me do an inventory in the store and stuff like that. And so I learned this sort of like business mind from my grandfather. My parents were super creative. And so when I started my career right out of school, it was in marketing and I thrived in marketing. And my real career trajectory started at Ford in a model that they were building out for building retention with the brand and loyalty with Ford customers. And I actually found my way. I was very successful there. I was one of the youngest executives in the company. I built a division there that ended up being installed at Ford dealers around the world. I was speaking at Ford conferences when I was 21, 22. And so that got me a lot of education, a lot of credibility. And along the way, I got recruited by an advisor. One of my buddies was doing great at a wealth management firm. He said, Robert, this stuff that you know that you do in marketing and creatively, our industry needs it. I had a director title at Ford. I was able to jump over and get a VP title and a six-figure salary, you know, in my early 20s. And that was why I initially moved. And then I said, wow, this is a great industry. Like, we're really helping people. And I like the people I work with. Everybody's really smart. And most people in this industry are also doing pretty well financially. And so I said, I think this is a place I could grow. And I never left. That was 20 plus years ago. And my career in marketing just went from marketing an individual firm to starting a new firm to growing that firm to about $650 million in assets under management organically in less than 5 years, to starting an agency for advisors, to starting a technology company for advisors that is Snappy Kraken. So it's just been one step after the other in this creative marketing area of finance.
I love your perspective on the industry coming from Ford and then seeing what the industry is. And I think that outsider perspective is really good because there is so much good happening in this space. And it's a matter of trying to figure out how to get all of the good to be heard by more people and attracted here. And that's why I'm such a fan of and intrigued by marketing, because I think that advisors, we can be better marketers because we are doing such a great thing that more people need to know about it. And I'm curious from your perspective, 20 years now, right? Starting with that firm, then helping to build another firm organically to now, you know, an agency and then a technology company. How have you seen, or what are some of the key, maybe top two or three things that you've seen been the drastic evolutions of marketing from where, when you began to now where we are, that has impacted this industry maybe in a positive way? Some of the changes that you've seen in regards to advisors and how they market themselves and how they get their name and their brand out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the industry has evolved more than the marketing has. I can tell you that much. I mean, as an industry, if you look at the role of the personal financial advisor and how it's expanded and how technology has enabled it. And I mean, I've watched just in the last 20 years, the evolution of the advisor gone from brokers to wealth managers to financial planners, and then all of the, just the way that we deliver and the breakaways from the wirehouses and the independent movement. And so I've seen a lot in the industry, but I have to say marketing has just not evolved in this industry as fast as other industries. And we're still behind in this industry. And that's part of why I do what I do, is because I'm motivated to see advisors continue to do better marketing. And some of the new marketing rules have enabled that too. You know, the ability to use testimonials now, for example, is a pretty big deal. And something that if you just look at the rest of marketing, that's been going on for, you know, a long time, well over a decade, maybe 15, even pushing 20 years. Reviews and testimonials have been very popular, but our industry is finally just now able to use them. So I think that speaks to how behind we are. But all that being said, one of the biggest things that I've seen that I'm really proud of advisors for doing is there's a lot more, I don't have the right word, but I'll just use unstuffiness. Unstuffiness, right, in our industry, because for a long time it was like everybody was just so afraid to be themselves and everything was so buttoned up and you know, white shirt, blue suit, plain, boring brands. And there's still a lot of that, but I'm seeing this movement of advisors, especially younger advisors who are projecting their personality and their lifestyle, and they're doing really cool things with their brands. And that is creating differentiation, and it's creating a lot of opportunities for them because they're attracting attention in ways that maybe the big wirehouses and the other firms that are afraid to loosen up a little bit haven't been able to do. And I think that's a pretty great trend.
I want to talk on that, and I want to go back to another point, but I'll stick on this one for a second. Do you think that loosening up aspect has come from a focus on kind of being more niche-y as opposed to generalist? Like this trend of having niches and being like, I'm serving this type of person, like the FedEx delivery driver only. Is that one of the reasons why you think it's loosened up? What has been the accelerant or the driver of that change from your seat, from your perspective? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's reflective of the world in general, I think. You know, advisors maybe, as in other examples I mentioned, have been slower to adopt, but social media has really changed things. I mean, everybody has more visibility into the lives and personalities of politicians, celebrities, you know, the advent of reality TV, and all these things where I think people have just learned that they can be more effective if they actually let people see who they are. Used to be work was work, personal was personal, and those lines have sort of all been blurred. And just human nature, wanting to work with people that we know and like, and this being such a people business, I mean, at the very core of this business is a lot of trust, and trust comes from relationships. And there's been a lot of people like myself and others who've been evangelizing that trusting relationships are based on knowing somebody. People want to know you. They want to see who you are outside of work. You've got to tell your story. And that is catching on. And because advisors look around and they see other industries doing it successfully, I think the comfort level has increased. And as advisors have seen other advisors doing this and having success with it, their desire to adopt it has increased. And so it's a bit of a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've always been an industry. It's not a wrong thing or a knock on it. It's just we follow the herd. We don't really lead the herd, right? We need someone to go out and do it, and then we'll go follow it once we see it's successful. I want to go back on another point you made with regards to marketing hasn't evolved as fast as other industries. And I'm curious if you can pinpoint why. Is it because of regulation, maybe? Is it because of lack of desire of the industry? Is it because there's overconfidence in our space, right? That we have the relationships, it's a relationship business. Or is it a combination of all of it? I'm just curious of, as you look at other industries and you compare to ours, what is the driver that's keeping us from becoming like a marketing powerhouse, I guess, as an industry from that standpoint?
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of the things that are at the root of it. I mean, regulation is definitely one of them. And perhaps more than regulation, though, is the way certain firms interpret regulation. Mm-hmm. So even right now, I mean, I can just give you an example. There's a lot of them, but one example would be the value of incorporating text messaging into your business as an advisor. So we've got data on this. We've got thousands of advisors all over the country using a variety of channels. Text messaging increases your opt-in rates on your marketing campaigns 4x. So every advisor should be using text message opt-ins on their website that say, have a question about how to save money on taxes, text me. It's just that simple. You 4x your response rate. Why wouldn't you drive 4x the conversions? It makes total sense. But there are still firms, I encounter them all the time, that will not allow advisors to text, even though there are regulated ways that are in harmony with regulations, I should say, to allow advisors to text by archiving and capturing and monitoring and meeting all of the regs. You can do it. But a lot of firms still say, no, you can't do it. So part of it's the way firms interpret the regulations. That's a big, big area. But among other advisors that don't have those limitations, you still see some resistance. And I think one of the biggest reasons is because most advisors don't have to. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a group of advisors who are trying to be very competitive, on the bleeding edge, adopting technology, doing creative marketing, hungry to grow. They're out there. We work with them. But when you look at the average growth rates in the industry, they are reflective of the fact that many advisors are content to have a lifestyle business that grows very slowly, either based on market growth and the few referrals they get, or the very little bit of marketing that they do. And that affords them all of the lifestyle they want. So mm-hmm. Why do more? Why try to be more creative? Now, you're in software like we are. Well, competition's a big deal. And if you're not innovating and you're not working hard to stay on the bleeding edge, you will get eaten alive. But advisors haven't really faced that. So why innovate if you don't have to?
Yeah, that's so spot on. And I think that it's a matter of, I always say, and it's like, this is a great industry. We do a lot of good and we make an impact. But it's also a very nice industry because it's the one industry where you don't have to do really anything and your income will double every 10 years because of market growth. If you just get a set of clients and you just don't do anything, just don't lose them, then you're actually going to see your income go up double in 10 years and you have not done one investment into growth or innovation, whatever it may be. That you can't say that about many industries, right? And I think that that's why there's some push of people saying like, hey, we need to change it. But I don't know if it necessarily needs to that's a whole nother podcast. But I also think the concept that you mentioned about interpretation of regulation, I think that that also sees, because when we were running our technology company, when we were trying to initiate a new technology, to your point, there was really no need to innovate or no need to adopt this, even though it was going to create this massive amount of efficiency and better the client experience, but there wasn't a need to do it. So there's like a hindrance to do it. And everybody, I think, misinterprets regulation, but they also misinterpret the client's desires. Like, oh, my client would look at me less if I gave online scheduling to them. That means that I need my people to call and talk to them because they value that conversation. And in reality, they don't. They would actually value the ease and the efficiency of online scheduling. And so I think there is a lot of that is a challenge. And I mean, from your perspective, as you listen to that and you see it every day from a technology standpoint, you know how the tech world works, and then you work in the advisory world. What would be the driver of changing that? Or is there going to be one?
Why does anybody change? I mean, why do we ever change? Yeah, I mean, we're either forced to change or something creates a hunger in us for change. And that's going to be an individual decision. I do think that advisors are going to continue to feel pressure if they're not changing, because you've got a lot of private equity entering our space. That expectation of growth after you've got institutional money in a firm changes. So you've got a lot of dry powder that's being deployed into this space to get aggregators and integrators to grow. And they're looking at their technology stacks. They're looking at how to create a better experience for clients and prospects. They're looking at how to capture more business. They're making bigger promises. They're leveraging things like testimonial marketing. Pretty soon, if you're not trying to keep up, you will look like a dinosaur. Mm. And that will start to have an impact on your business. If it doesn't have that impact now or before you retire, good for you. But if you want to sell your business at a higher multiple, it should be tech-enabled. The recent studies that have come out prove that. If you want to attract the next generation of investors when your clients die or when something else changes, and you better have the right technology and the right look and feel to attract them. So, you know, look, I'm not the person who's going to tell any advisor that they should change what they're doing. If they're happy with what they're doing, their clients are happy with what they're doing, and they're achieving the outcomes that they want. That's one of the beautiful things about this profession, and especially the independent channel. Mm-hmm. However, just know, if you're not changing and you have a expectation of a meaningful exit, or you have a time horizon in this business that's longer than 5 or 10 years, you might need to rethink your position.
And it goes to, you know, Mark Hurley talks about in his Welcome to the Jungle paper, right? You're going to have the massive mega RIAs, which is going to be 30 to 40 firms. And then you're going to have the specialist firms, which are going to be niche that go really deep. And then you're going to have the generalist firms. And the generalist firms are going to have a really, really tough time to make this business work. The super thin profit margins, trying to deliver the services of both the specialists and the megas. And it's going to be really, really hard. And it's going to be less and less attractive. And to your point, valuation, which is going to lead us into even more marketing, tech enablement and leveraging tech efficiently. But it's also a matter of organic growth. Like, these firms that are getting the best multiples are the best organic growth. You strip away market growth, our industry isn't able to grow organically, which is why we need firms to be more focused on marketing, which then gets into the point of the question of, like, what is the challenge that advisors have to overcome with marketing? Like, I think that advisors like try marketing, but they may not do it well, or they may not be like understanding of the true process and strategy. And so I'm curious from your perspective, right? If someone's like, I want to sell my firm in 6 years, let's say, I know I need to get tech enabled, I need to get efficient, and I need to get some organic growth going. I need multi-pronged growth, organic growth strategy. What are the challenges that they are stand to face that they need to overcome in the marketing world to deliver on organic growth via marketing channels?
Yeah, there's a lot of specifics, but at a macro level, I think they are related to investment, integration of systems, and I don't mean just technology integration. I mean like integration of your strategies and your technology, and however you want to frame it. Patience or consistency. There are so many options for marketing. Mm-hmm. It's endless. And advisors have great success in very limited channels at times because they know their audience, they know where they are, they know how to engage them, and they go deep on those channels and they can do very, very well. And then other advisors go to a conference and they hear an advisor on stage talking about how they built a niche for themselves on Quora. And they're like, oh, I should be on Quora, you know? And they go on Quora, they're like, oh, it didn't work for me, you know? And it's just, there's a lot to be said for understanding where the investment needs to go, investing the right amount, either of capital or sweat equity, doing it long enough and doing it in a way that's integrated. Like, you know, it's snappy crack. And look, we're not a silver bullet. we do a lot of things. We'll build an advisor a beautiful new website. We'll tie it into their automated marketing campaigns. We'll have automatic nurturing going on. We'll have new client onboarding campaigns. We allow them to communicate on all these different channels. We give them all the tools. And then advisors will come in and say, yeah, I've been with you for a year. I didn't get any new clients. And of course, when I hear that, I'm like, wow, you know, we must have done something wrong. You know, we didn't serve them well. I'm like, but that's so weird because we have advisors getting lots of new clients. Like, what do we do wrong? You know, and I go in, we start looking at the data and I'm like, you know, you got like 100 new opt-ins from your website this year and a bunch of them submitted forms on your campaigns. And, you know, how did you follow up on these? And they're like, well, what do you mean follow up on them? But don't you guys follow up on them? Yeah. I mean, we nurture them by email, but then when they submit a form and they have a question, how do you respond? Oh, I don't respond. Well, why not? Well, I don't know if they have any money. Okay. So we built you this website. We got you hundreds of new leads. We nurtured them for you. They actually asked for some help and you didn't follow up. Well, all I had was an email. And what that is, that's symptomatic of not having a good strategy, not having a good system. Now, the advisors who are crushing it, give them that exact same scenario and they turn 20 of those people into clients. Why? Because they know that that's one cog in the wheel. That's one piece. So now they have a way to call and qualify and vet those people and introduce them to the firm. And there are all these things that go together, including the brand, the marketing, the experience, the salesmanship. All those things have to converge to really drive organic growth. And it doesn't happen instantly. So you have to be patient. That means you have to keep pumping in the money and giving it the time. And then eventually it starts to bear fruit, but so many advisors give up before it does. And I don't mean to pontificate here, but you definitely asked a good question because it's not one thing, right? It's a lot of things. And that investment, that commitment, that integration of your systems and processes, that's what the biggest and most successful firms are doing. They're thinking about all those things.
And as you're talking about this, like, because it seems like so much, right? Integration of strategies. And you got to think about a process to onboard and like to nurture these people. And it's not just like, you can't just go and, like you said, hire Snappy Kraken and like at a snap of the fingers, you've now got business flowing in. It's kind of reminds me of those days when early website days where it's like, I launched a website. Like now I'm standing by the phone. Like, why is the phone not ringing? I launched the website. It should be ringing, but it's not ringing. This website stinks. No more website, right? No, the website, you got to still get people to go to the website and you got to make sure that the website's of value and it tells your story. And it seems like it's like a lot of work. And so I think that there's a mindset shift that has to happen. But I also, and I'm curious on your view of this, because I also feel that a lot of this structurally is failed at the beginning. And what I mean by that is I think that firms are fearful of narrowing in their persona, who they're marketing to, too deeply because they don't want to miss out on anybody. So they come in and say, I want to just market to the retiree. I serve the retiree. That's who I want to market to, is the retiree. The retirees like to play golf. They like to fish. They like to travel. They like to do this. They like to do that. And so then you start this message and you wonder why nobody's connecting, because you're really not connecting with anybody because you're speaking to everybody. Whereas if you were to narrow in and say, I just want to talk to the person that likes to play golf, that's 65, lives in the city of Atlanta, and that's it. You're like, well, that's way too narrow. I'm not going to get any leads, but at least you're talking to some people. Do you see that? Is that a challenge that firms face because they're fearful of not being able to attract anybody? They need the large numbers to make this work in their feelings and they want it to work so fast?
Yeah. I mean, you're basically describing 90% of the advisor community. The vast majority of advisors focus on retirees and they treat it like it's a niche, and it's not a niche. It's everyone. And especially when they say we work with pre-retirees and retirees, it's like, oh great. So you work with everyone, you know, and that is part of the problem. You have to be super clear on who your audience is. And the truth is when you get in this industry, you'll pretty much take anybody that fogs a mirror. That's sort of how you start. Some never depart from that, and they would probably get a better start if they would be more specific. But a lot of the ways people get into this industry, they're taught to go after all their friends, all their family, work the lists, work all the opportunities that the firm puts in front of them that may or may not be a good fit. So it takes a while sometimes to figure that out, but it is much better to know from the beginning who you're going to serve and go after them. And you see a lot of more mature advisors doing that. I think it's hard for young advisors when they come in to know that, because sometimes it's revealed over time. When you work with a lot of clients, you start to figure out where you can thrive and who you work best with and what their unique challenges are. But I would strongly endorse and, you know, everything you said, doing the opposite, everything you just said, like that. The goal is choose an audience that you can speak to directly, who will recognize that you are speaking to them uniquely, that you understand the challenges and the pain points of. Like, if I was going back to being an advisor right now, I would 100% focus on technology CEOs. There's no doubt about it. There's no other niche I would have, because I am a technology CEO. I would be discussing equity components and exit strategies and all the things I know. Any advisor who can do that, who can really key in on their audience and demonstrate from the minute you get on their website, we work with this person in this way, we solve these problems. And look, you can do that with retirees too, just to be fair. But you better be in a place where there's a lot of them, and you better be in a place where there's not another really dominant advisory firm that's already going to do that way better than you. And, you know, you don't have an advantage. But knowing your audience and going after the right audience is critical to success in this business, unless you have a massive budget. And not everybody can spend $1 million a month on advertising like Fisher Investments can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your magnet becomes stronger the more narrow it becomes. And I think that that is just something that you have to be willing to go in, and you'll see that because then it's like this community of people, right? I talked to an air traffic controller, and it's like those people all talk about it because they're very unique individual humans. Like, they have different, and if you know them deeply, you can attract them. And the reason I know that and what not to do so well is because we failed at it, both when we did our technology company and at times with our wealth management business. And it's a lesson learned. You know, I'm curious when you think about this, getting into kind of data and metrics, right? And judging success. Advisors are analytical. It's always like, well, I invested $500,000 in marketing and I got like 3 leads and that's not enough. Like, when it comes to marketing, what should be the baseline for judging success? Is it unfair? Is the leap too wide to say, I'm now marketing with content and social advertising, so I should now have 3 new clients every quarter? Like, is that too big of a leap because there's so much bridge in between? And what is the right metric or the right focus for advisors to look at?
Yeah, it's important to know what your marketing spend is doing for you. The idea that you spend $500,000 and get 3 leads, I mean, obviously that you were speaking, you know, hyperbolically, but that would be a huge problem. So, you know, you have to know what you're spending and what you're getting out of it. At a foundational level, knowing ROI is really sexy. And you should know ultimately what you're spending on marketing versus new revenue generated into the firm. But that is definitely way too far apart from day-to-day marketing activities to be helpful. That's something you want to look at annually.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about day-to-day marketing activities, there's way too many other dots that have to be connected. So I just talked to an advisor the other day who's scaled a very successful firm. They're generating hundreds of leads a month. They're well into the several billions of dollars in assets under management. We talked extensively about how they use Snappy Kraken with other things. And that advisor, when I asked about metrics, said this: all I care about is how many people my advisors have to meet with. That's what they track. Okay. We started digging into that with their marketing person a little bit. Well, the marketing person is tracking audience growth. How many new opt-ins are we getting? How many new emails are we getting? Where is that audience growth coming from? So how much is our audience growing from the podcast? How much is our audience growing from the television advertising? How much is our audience growing from seminars? So they know where their audience growth is coming from and what channels. That means they're tracking it with different URLs and different phone numbers. Now they can see we're investing this on seminars, this on television, this on podcast, and then they can see the overall amount of audience growth. Where's that coming from? Then they track their conversion rates. So inside of their audience, inside of each of those channels, how many of those people are actually becoming clients each year? And what starts to happen is you can begin to see, hey, we're getting 50% of our audience growth here, but this has a higher conversion rate over here. And then when you start comparing the data, you realize, oh, wait a second. These clients are actually hitting us here and here and here. There's multiple touch points. The reason this is converting higher is because their intent is higher. If they'll spend an hour listening to a podcast, they are more interested in our firm than just downloading a free lead magnet off of this advertising channel over here. And so the conversion rate's higher, but both are important. And so then that influenced their marketing strategy. And what they started doing was they started sending links to the podcast to all the people who opted in for the free lead magnets. Why? Because it's an indicator of intent. See, all the marketing works together. They're tracking all the activities. Now, the advisors just saying to themselves, well, look, I just care on people they're meeting with. But the marketers on the team know where those people are coming from, how long it's taking them to convert, and you really have to see that by channel. Now, that is overwhelming for most advisors, candidly. Like, you just want to meet with clients. Look, I've been there. Serve people. I'm in this business to serve people. I'm not a data analyst. So you need a good data partner. I mean, you need a good dashboard. You need something that tracks your activities by channel. You need visibility into those things, and you need somebody, if it's not you, somebody to be analyzing that data and helping you make good decisions. But you cannot be too hasty, because audience growth takes time. The entire audience is not immediately qualified. And you have to understand that the idea of taking someone from a cold audience member to a client is a journey. Mm-hmm. And you have to be committed to that journey. So it's a lot more than just, hey, I did this activity, what's the ROI? That matters, but there's a lot in between.
I'm curious, because I know you've done some videos on landing pages. Y'all talk a lot about landing pages, so you can have these specific drivers of action items into landing pages. But in order to set up, like, let's take a step back on the dashboards, because this is, you know, the idea of a journey funnel reminds me of the technology days. And I think that the SaaS mentality of, like, your CAC versus your LTV and your MQLs and your SQLs and moving them through the funnel and at what, how much are converting at each level and the cost of each and how long are they staying clients? Like, that's like, we need to start thinking like that. But, like, let's take a step back. How do we even get set up to be able to track this effectively? Like, where do we even start, and what tools are out there that we can leverage to help us? Snappy Kraken may be one of them, but what are we able to utilize to help us get the infrastructure to be able to do that and execute that?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of tools that do this. Marketers use them all the time. HubSpot, Salesforce, Heap, and then you've got, you know, lead pages, and you've got so many options. You got lots of email marketing tools. You can use Constant Contact or MailChimp, and they're everywhere. I have to be very blunt, though, when I say that most of those things are not compliant, and most of those things require some enterprise level of internal management. You got to have a really savvy marketing director and a content team. And so Snappy Kraken, you know, we set out to solve that problem. And so that's what I know best. And what we do is we help advisors deploy multiple campaigns on multiple channels in a trackable way, in a customizable way. So they can deploy 6 campaigns for different audiences or niches that they're marketing to and see the performance of each of those campaigns. They can run ads to each of those campaigns. They can track the performance of each campaign. We give them different numbers that they can use for texting so they can track the performance of different campaigns. And so this is part of what we do. And we give them a dashboard. We then score their leads. We show them who's engaging at the highest level. We surface those leads. They can immediately respond to people through the platform. We've got their website, their text messaging, their digital campaigns all right there. So I don't know anybody that does it better than us, frankly. And I know that wasn't a tee up question for me, and sorry to answer it so gratuitously, but you know, that's what we do. And I think it's important. If you're not going to do it with us, that's fine. But just know that these channels should be tracked individually. And at the very least, set up separate URLs, set up separate phone numbers, and start to collect that data, because it's going to help you make better decisions.
As you're talking, and you know, I think it's fair for you to promote what Snappy Kraken's doing because it is unique. There isn't anybody out there doing it. What it reminds me of is, and a lot of advisors I think can relate to this experience, is when we moved over from an old CRM over to Salesforce, you know, we knew that eventually we probably were going to need some expertise help, but we're like, we'll get through it with just us, and we'll get a consultant, and you know, we'll be fine. It was a complete mess. It was a complete mess until you invested in the time and the focus. And so then we had to go and hire someone to be full-time to overcome it all for us. And so the reason that I think that that resonates is that, yes, you can go and get HubSpot and go and get you know, some other, you know, content writers, but then you have to be willing to invest the money into making sure that the right people, because you can't just piecemeal that together, or because you need to have someone running it. And if you want to invest and do it on your own, then it takes a lot. But there are systems and abilities like what y'all are doing that can provide that expertise fully and deeply without piecemealing, because it brings the holistic nature. And I think that that is somewhat of value, because everybody goes and tries to get like this content writer over here for, you know, on Fiverr, and then get this, you know, this HubSpot expert over here to set up HubSpot, and then this other person over here for Facebook ads, and nobody's talking to each other. And then the person in the middle is the advisor, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And they're like, I don't know, I'm not getting any leads. And then they cut it off and they stop with marketing. And that's just not the right way to do it from that standpoint. So I think that it's a fair way of going about it. Before I let you go and we wrap this up, we got a few more minutes. I'm curious from your standpoint, when you look at the universe of content types, and I know that you got to use all of them, but I there's got to be a ranking system, right? When you think about like written, audio, video, speaking, whatever it may be, I'm curious to your standpoint, if someone had to just choose one or maybe two, what would be the top two of those content types in terms of you thinking the most impact on attraction to the prospect?
Yeah. So I think of it this way. What's the ultimate currency in our business?
Trust.
There you go. Yeah. I should have paused longer. You nailed it. It's trust.
Okay, well, hopefully, I think I didn't get it wrong. That'd been bad.
Yeah. Well, then I would have been like, well, actually.
No, well, Matt, you're actually completely wrong. Yeah.
It's definitely trust. So where does the most trust come from?
I'm not answering that one. I paused longer to give you the chance
because you answered the last one so well. So sometimes I ask rhetorical questions and I pause too long. But the answer is it comes from an in-person interaction. The most trust you can build is when you are face to face, whites of the eyes, mano a mano, shaking hands. That is the best and fastest way to build trust. The history of seminars and client events being so successful speaks to that. That, however, does not scale. You can't, if you really want to scale a business, you usually can't meet with that many people face to face. You'll burn yourself out. You'll be giving seminars all the time. You have no time for clients. And not to mention that sometimes your clients aren't all in the same geographic location anyway. So that's the highest level of the scale, in person. Let's just put a pin in that for a second. Then what's at the bottom of the scale? Where's the least trust? The least amount of trust is probably something that you read that's text only, especially now. ChatGPT, I mean, hey, you can generate all the text you want. You don't have to be an expert. You can be an expert on anything instantly just by prompting AI. So people are going to read stuff on your website, on your blogs, and they're going to be like, did they write that? Did ChatGPT write it? I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong to use it, but it's not going to do a tremendous amount to build trust unless It's super niche focused. And they see, oh, wow, how do RSUs work at my company? Oh, my goodness, this is really for me, right? So, okay, but text is probably the lowest end of the spectrum. So if you think of, if you've got in-person up here and text down here, it's just a set of stairs. You know, after text, the next thing is probably voice. After voice, it's probably video. And then after video, it's in person. So this is my point. There is no channel that will build trust more effectively besides in person than video. And when people can see and hear that you are truly an expert, not just what AI wrote, not that you're reading a script, that you're speaking extemporaneously with confidence and assertiveness on a topic that you know that resonates with an audience that you understand, you build trust. That's why video is so powerful, because it allows people to immediately make a connection with you and recognize your expertise. Even if you're not dynamic, even if you're not beautiful, it doesn't matter. Your clients still like you because of what you know and because you're a good communicator. Can't be a good advisor without being a good communicator for the most part. So communicate. Just do it on video as much as possible. And when we see advisors do this, I'll just give you an example. We created a campaign that basically is an email that goes out to all of your prospects that includes a link to a video. And on the page below the video, it says, hey, if you have any questions, submit them here. Advisors will send their prospect list a newsletter for years. Never get any leads, send one of those videos, and get dozens of fresh leads. Not because we are magic, because video is magic, and because they actually use technology to their advantage with their personality and play to their strengths. I can't, if there's one thing you're going to do as an advisor that you want to make an impact with in your marketing, if I had to really narrow it down, video would be at the top of the list.
You nailed it, right? I mean, it's the combination of voice and text and visual, right? So you got all of it because you're speaking the text, you're using your voice, and you're seeing you talk. I think that the challenge, and I'm curious, as you train advisors that work with Snappy Kraken to do video, I've always seen that advisors that are good at talking to people in person struggle with talking on video. Why is that? And how can an advisor just overcome that and be like, because video is great. It is a double-edged sword, because video could backfire really heavily on you if it's so scripted and so like tight. It really works for you when it's like authentic in your real self. And some people like it and some people hate it. That's like authentic, because not everybody's going to like you. So not everybody's going to like your video. How do you get advisors there?
It's a muscle. It is absolutely a muscle, because the only reason they're not good on video is because they're self-conscious. You put a camera in somebody's face, tell them you're recording, and they fall apart. If they don't have the experience, that comes with, it's the same with being on a podcast. It's the same with anything that's being recorded. It's insecurity. And you've got to get past that with repetitions. So the key is to practice over and over again until you get comfortable. And we recommend, there's actually a partnership we have with a company called Idea Decanter. They do remote video coaching. They help you set up the lighting and the audio. And then they give you coaching and they record all the videos and you get to see your transformation, you know, over the course of 90 days or whatever. And that instills a lot of confidence. Other advisors I know that are great at video, I've had them on stage at my conference and I have them show some of their original videos and then their new videos. And they're like, I was terrible at this. Look how bad this is. And the audience agrees. And they see the current product, which is what most of us see and think we can never do it, because we're like, oh, I can't be that good. Well, guess what? They weren't that good before either. So you got to do it, man. You got
to
do it.
Yeah. That reminds me of videos I used to do early on. We used to do this thing called More Than a Hat Rack. I mean, those things were terrible. That was like the worst content video ever. And you just got to do it and put yourself out there and realize that nobody really cares. Like, they're not going to go back and find, I mean, if they want to, they're more than welcome to my stuff, but they're not, they don't care about me that much. Like, I think about me more than anybody else thinks about me. So nobody else cares a little about anything that I do from that standpoint. I want to ask this question, and then I want to wrap it up with our last two questions in a lightning round. This is kind of a lightning round question, but if I were an advisor, so video, is the next best thing to in person. I get that. All right, so I'm going to invest in video. I'm planning on becoming great at video. I'm going to do idea capture. I'm ready to go. And I get really good. Now, if I could only choose one area to market that video, one channel for marketing that video, what have y'all seen be the most effective channel from the data that you have for attracting clients looking for wealth managers? And I know that that's like a silver bullet crystal ball question, but I'm curious if there's anything that's been seen in the data of a channel that works better than another when it comes to this particular industry.
Yeah, there is. First of all, YouTube is the answer, but expectations around YouTube are way off. I mean, most advisors are not going to have such compelling and unique content as to build a massive audience on a channel like YouTube. However, when we actually look at the data, and I'm trying to pull it up here, and I want to just touch on this real quick, the performance of video is most effective when you promote it. So in other words, if you put your videos on YouTube, you then send out emails with links to them. So you're driving traffic to the videos. And if they're all on the same channel, sometimes more of your videos will get consumed. Here's the data, actually. When you send an email with a video, it has 117% better open rate and 120% higher click rate. So you're more than doubling the performance by including a video in an email. So here's what I say. Put them on YouTube, then email links to them. The other thing I will add is if you're going to put in the effort to make the videos, post them natively on your social channels as well. Upload them to LinkedIn, upload them to Twitter, upload them to whatever channel you're using, because they will get prioritized by the social networks.
Mm, there you go. You have it. That's your answer. All right, here we go. I mean, Robert, I may have to have you back on and do it in person or something, because I know you're just up a little bit north here in Georgia. But I mean, we could talk for hours about this stuff. So I appreciate the time. Before I let you go, though, I got to ask these two questions. So I ask all guests. And the one of them is I love to learn from people that are much smarter than me, like yourself. So, and I like to learn through books. So I always ask my guests, what's one book out there that you think everybody should read? And I know you have a book out there, which they should go get on Amazon. So outside of your book, what's one book out there that you think everybody should read to better themselves?
Based on the audience that I think is listening to this podcast, I will recommend a book called The Great CEO Within. It is a book that I have read, reread, and reference often that is packed full of how to operate a business and scale a business successfully based on people who've really done it.
Love that. Everybody should read that. Phenomenal choice. Last question. We talked about a lot. There's a lot that we probably could have talked about that we didn't talk about, but if you had to choose anything that you could as an actual piece of advice for our listeners to take away and implement today or tomorrow to better themselves, their firm, their business, whatever it may be, what would that be?
At this moment, my answer is choose the right partners. Choose the right partners. People that share your values, your commitment, that have a good attitude, that you enjoy working with. And whether that's people who work on your payroll for you as minority partners or majority partners that you're equal shares with, whatever. Surround yourself with the right partners and everything gets better and easier, even on the bad days.
That's incredible. That is such good advice and is a lesson I've learned the hard way many of times, as many people probably have. Robert Sophia, you're the man. I really appreciate everything you're doing for our industry. I appreciate you spending time here on the Bridging the Gap. I know that there's going to be people that want to continue to explore more with you, potentially work with you if they aren't already. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you and the team at Snappy Kraken?
Yeah, me personally, just hit me up on social media or robert@snappykraken.com by email. And for the team, you know, snappykraken.com.
Great. Robert Sophia, you're the man. Thanks so much. Stay well, be well, and look forward to having you back on the pod here soon.
Thank you, man. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Bridging the Gap. Don't forget to give us a rating and let us know what you think.